Welcome to The Rubric. I'm your host, Joe Andrew.
I'm Erica Connell.
And I'm Eric Hsu.
Today on the show, we talk with the editors of DID Web about this innovative DID method. Ori Steele, CTO at Transmute, and Oliver Turbu, tech lead at Spruce Systems Incorporated. This is part one of a two-part interview with Ori Steele and Oliver Turbu regarding DID Web. The continuation of the conversation can be found in part two.
Part of building simple and usable software and standards is keeping them short.
On the rubric, we talk to folks making decentralized identity happen. We chat about the technologies and motivations behind decentralized identifiers, including DIDs, DID documents, and DID methods, so our listeners can make better decisions about which DID method is appropriate for their use.
Decentralized identifiers enable robust identity-based services without dependence on a trusted third party. So instead of being forced to use centralized identity verification services like Facebook, Google, or the Department of Motor Vehicles, DIDs can be created by anyone, anywhere, and be used for any purpose.
DID methods are the magic ingredient that give DIDs their flexibility. Before creating any specific DID, you first choose a DID method, which determines how you perform the create, read, update, and deactivate operations on a DID of that method. Once created, each DID includes the name of its method in the identifier itself, so that when you use the DID, others know how to retrieve the associated DID document that contains the cryptographic material for secure interactions.
Different DID methods use different underlying mechanisms with different performance, security, and privacy trade-offs.
This show, The Rubric, reviews different DID methods with their creators and implementers, so you can make better decisions about when and how to use DIDs in your applications.
Ori Steele is the CTO and co-founder at Transmute, where he leads all architecture, design, and execution for the Transmute platform. Ori has an MS in computer science and a BS in cybersecurity from Stevens Institute of Technology. He is an author of the W3C Decentralized Identifiers DIDs version 1.0 specification and an editor of the W3C Verifiable Credentials Data Model. Ori has managed security concerns for startups and publicly traded companies. He has built secure web applications in finance, energy, and healthcare. Ori, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oliver Turbu is tech lead at Spruce Systems Incorporated. He has been working in the digital identity space for about a decade and was involved as chair, lead editor, author, and contributor in various organizations such as ISO, CEN/CENELEC, W3C, DIF, and OIDF. Before joining Spruce, Mr. Turbu joined Walt.ID's advisory board, was head of architecture at Consensus Mesh Identity, and standards lead and solutions architect at Uport, part of Consensus SIS. At the Austrian State Printing Office, he worked as a solutions architect on mobile identity solutions for the public and private sectors, and became delegated expert into various identity-related ISO working groups. He also received the Austrian Standards Award in 2018. Oliver, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great, let's get started. DID Web takes advantage of existing World Wide Web infrastructure for DIDs. Instead of relying on a distributed ledger or embedding key material in the DID itself, DID Web uses websites to resolve DID documents, giving anyone who controls a web page the ability to host DID documents. So with that brief intro, why don't you tell me what is DID Web?
To me, DID Web is a very easy way and convenient way for issuers to participate in a decentralized identity ecosystem.
That's a good answer. I think, you know, to me, DID Web is both a bridging technology, you know, a way to connect the systems that we've relied on to build identity systems in the past to decentralized identifiers, which is sort of a newer, you know, way of representing identity concerns. And so DID Web has some characteristics that sort of fit into both of those worlds. I think it's a great bridging technology for folks who are interested in diving into decentralized identifiers, but they don't want to go all the way into, fairly heavy distributed ledger system as a way of starting to explore the space.
Yeah, when we invented DID Web at the Uport project, which was part of Consensus in 2018, So we had to deal with a lot of clients that had all reservations towards blockchain-based DITs since the tech was very nascent back then, and certain scalability and usability issues had to be resolved. And those companies were usually interested in participating as issuers. And then we thought that DITWeb was a good fit, whereas for end users, we usually would recommend it. It would have recommended other DIT methods that didn't rely on DNS. And in general, I believe in a evolutionary approach, and DITWeb is a good starting point to enter the decentralized identity space.
So DITWeb DIDs work through my web browser? Do I need a plugin?
DITWeb is fairly easy to register and easy to resolve. So in order to create a new identifier using DITWeb, you need to host a JSON file at a specific place on a web server. And in order to resolve a DITWeb, you need to be able to resolve a DNS request to that web server and then obtain that DID document. And so it's pretty straightforward to create a new DITWeb-based decentralized identifier if you have the ability to host a file on a web server. And if you have the ability to make network requests, it's fairly easy to get up and running and perform those two, you know, the most fundamental DID operations, the create operation and the resolve operation. And once you've got those working, you might get to the point where you want to make some updates. And in order to make those updates, you just change the file content at that location, and that new changes are available the next time someone resolves that identifier.
So to answer your question, there is no web browser needed to use DITWebs. There is actually just a HTTP agent needed to resolve DITWebs. But yep. That's the answer.
So what is the target audience for DITWeb in your mind? Or maybe ask another way, what use cases do you see as DITWeb's niche?
So I think, you know, because of the way DITWeb works and the need to sort of control a web server to have confidence in the long-term identifier, it's naturally suited to situations where you have an organization or a government that's already used to protecting resources on the web. And that makes it a little bit biased towards the sort of government or organization use cases, as opposed to this sort of individual, human user use cases. So I think it's a great DID method if you're a brand out there today and you have a website and folks are used to go navigating to your website to look at your products or to connect with your company. DITWeb is good for those use cases, but it's maybe not as good for use cases where you'd want to connect to a specific friend. Unless that friend is a web developer and runs their own website, DITWeb might not be the best DID method for individuals like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's also why I mentioned in the intro that we use DITWeb primarily for issuers in the Verifone credential ecosystem.
So it's really the group of kind of entities that make large use of the traditional internet as far as producing content instead of consuming it.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
It's the big web content producers, Google, Facebook, any of those big guys.
Not necessarily only those big guys, just any company that produces or can produce data about end user. It has data about end users. It could be banks. Sure. It could be online shops. I don't know what. There's actually no limitation. So a typical issue in the Verifone credential ecosystem.
Yeah. I mean, one other thing to keep in mind is most decentralized identifier methods that you encounter are in the space of, you know, public, globally resolvable. And some of them have a directory sort of structure built into them where you can enumerate the entire space of you know, that particular DID method. And DITWeb fits well into the sort of public, you know, use case scenarios for DID methods, but it's maybe you imagine trying to enumerate the entire space of DITWeb. It's very big space, and you can't easily enumerate all of the different DIDs that might exist. I mean, it's possible to, but it'd be hard. So if you compare, you know, DITWeb to like a side tree based DID method where you can see every single identifier that's ever been created, it's a little bit different. There isn't like a single place you can go to look up all of the DID webs that have ever been registered.
So relatedly, and you may have just answered this already in our previous question, but I own WonderlandStageAndScreen.com, another part of my life. I teach theater and film classes to kids. Can I use DID Web to create DIDs for business use, like confirming class registration or receipt of payments, that kind of thing? Is that a good use of DID Web?
Could be. Like I was saying before, when you create your DID Web, you have this document that you can use to express the different relationships that you want to expose for that identifier. So if you want to expose key material that you're going to use to create, you know, credentials for completing an education certificate program, you could use DID Web to do that. If you want to expose cryptocurrency addresses so that you can receive donations, you can do that with DID Web. One of the nice things about DID Web is it's very generous and flexible in terms of the kinds of structures that you can include in it. Whereas other DID methods tend to be really strict in terms of what kind of content can you put inside of your DID document. And that's actually one of my favorite parts about DID Web, because as a developer, I'm often experimenting with something new that might not be well supported. DID Web is a really great tool in the toolbox for, you know, for that kind of thing. There are some challenges that come with that. Like, you know, if I put a new interesting data structure in my DID Web DID document, many folks may not understand how to process that content sort of consistently. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but I think DID Web is definitely a really great tool if you're experimenting with sort of new verification relationships. It's very well suited for that.
So it sounds like it's good for any situation where your website may already be the definitive publication point for a DID. For example, Wonderland Stage and Screen could publish a different DID on their website and just say, hey, this is the DID we're using to sign our credentials, which means that your anchor of which DID is Wonderland Stage and Screen is already mediated by your website.
Yep.
So it feels like that would be an easy place to just put the entire DID document and host it via DID Web. There's no decrease in security there, because people already heard about the definitive DID through the web.
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the things that we use DID Web for is to use the also known as feature for that identifier so that you can link to other kinds of decentralized identifier methods. So I could use a DID Web on a web origin that's well known and associated with the brand, but then I can link from that DID Web to DID Ether or DID Ion or other DID methods that might have other properties. And that can be a good way of sort of, there's one, you know, easy way to find the DID for a given brand based on knowing its website, but then you can find other DIDs associated with that brand through its DID Web.
Nice. Now, you had mentioned earlier this pattern where DID Web is, for the two of you at least, primarily used for issuers. And you mentioned the facility that typically other large corporations or large governments have with managing and securing websites. But what about government employees and staff? Is there a way to think about, you know, so I'm a federal agent, or I work at the IRS, but now I'm an individual. And so are there privacy issues, or are there trade-offs, or are there still a good pattern where maybe for entities who are agents of that government entity that it makes sense?
So are you asking about sort of maybe delegated authority for within an organization, or are you asking about a corporate individual sort of employee identity?
I think the latter. I'm thinking in terms of I talked to an IRS agent on the phone because I got a letter from the IRS, and they could identify to me, here's my DID Web from IRS.gov. Is that a pattern that you think is a good fit?
I think it can be. If you think about what social media accounts identity sort of looks like today, now, your username on twitter.com or your username on github.com, GitHub and Twitter are trusted to maintain that identity and service and the capabilities that come with it. And I think some companies might take the same approach with DidWeb. You know, you could have child identity underneath a well-known web origin. So, you know, you could convert Twitter usernames to DidWebs if you really wanted to, and Twitter could help manage that, you know, process. The important thing to keep in mind about that, though, is that the web origin is still in control of that identity. And so you might trust Twitter to, you know, allow you to have that identity and to protect your identity so long as you comply with their terms of service. But if you start violating their site policy, they're in complete control of that identity, and they can, you know, remove your ability to make updates to it and, you know, censor you if you've, you know, violated their policy, or even if you haven't. So there are cases where, depending on your threat environment, you might not want to rely on that kind of identifier for certain kinds of activity. But I think there are also a lot of cases where you have a pretty comfortable business relationship with an organization, and that organization already manages an identity on your behalf, and people have come to know you through your work with that organization. And I think DidWeb's kind of growing to, I think those use cases can make a lot of sense for DidWeb. And it's especially sort of familiar for folks who are used to having, you know, their social media identities all with the same kind of, you know, username. They're reusing their alias, their handle on several different social media platforms. But they're used to this concept of each social media platform, I have a relationship with them, and, you know, I'm using them as part of my business, you know, if I'm a content creator, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so if you use DidWeb in that way, basically giving each user a DidWeb, then it's very similar to the traditional Twitter account model. So you would have introduced DIDs to your end users, but the end users are not really in control of the identifier, because Twitter in that case could always decide to no longer host those DIDs on behalf of the users. But in that case, what you still would get is that you would allow other Twitters, like other social media platforms, to reference user accounts by UI, issuing credentials to them, and then those new Twitter accounts, this DidWeb user accounts, would then be able to prove cryptographically that they own certain credentials, for instance. So there would be still some benefits, but it's very similar to the traditional user account model that Twitter has. To answer your question, it's possible.
So talking about how Twitter or Facebook could use DidWeb and be definitive for their accounts, it reminds me of the phrase that's popular. Let me put it differently. There's a phrase in the Bitcoin world, not my keys, not my coins. And yet Coinbase, you know, has millions of users, and they're using Coinbase's keys. So I feel like it's an almost exactly analogous sort of role, in that people trust Coinbase to be in that position and to hold the keys and to take care of things, because they're the experts. They have the sysadmin that are there 24/7. They have the people who are actually dealing with watching the network and monitoring and making sure it's not being attacked. Whereas if it's on my system, I'm on the hook for all of that expertise. You know, I've had some really interesting arguments with folks who absolutely don't believe decentralized can be more secure, because then you're asking every individual to be that security expert. So you just brought into focus that it's the same trade-off in some ways. For certain uses of DidWeb, they have the same topology of how we use Coinbase or other sort of custodial services for cryptocurrency.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's interesting to think about the transition to the cloud, right? You know, what drove businesses to invest in cloud technology and start to trust cloud service providers as opposed to running their own infrastructure? And there's these natural cycles in technology. You know, we go to the mainframe, and then we go back to the individual PC, and then we go back to the mainframe again. And I think, like you said, you know, the not my keys, not my coins sort of analogy, when you apply it to web ownership, you have to think about really what would it take to fully own the web stack for your DID web. And it's not just, you know, can I put a file at a specific path on a web server? It's also thinking about who controls the DNS zone files and what about, you know, the nation state level internet infrastructure that also comes into play when resolving, you know, DNS records and those kinds of concerns. So it can feel sort of DID web in some ways, it feels very simple, but then the deeper you dig, the more you sort of realize that the web infrastructure we rely on today for online banking is actually fairly complex and somewhat decentralized even in and of itself.
I think while you can actually build DID web in a way, so imagine the Twitter example. So Twitter could decide to give the users DID webs under their Twitter domain, but Twitter would still own the domains. Twitter could decide, though, to give users control over the keys in the user-owned DID web documents, but Twitter would still control the domain. And so it's then they would basically have control over the keys, but they would still not have control over the domain, which is not the same as exactly as not your crypto, or not your keys, not your crypto, but goes in the same direction.
Before moving on, I just wanted to clarify something that's been said a few times, which is that in your minds, DID web is primarily for issuers. I just wanted to clarify, issuers of what? I believe it is verifiable credentials, but wanted to get that out from you guys.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Usually, a lot of our use cases, they are using DIDs and verifiable credentials, and DIDs as the identifier of the issuer in the credential. And that's where we would use DID webs for enterprises like banks or insurance companies and so on.
Yep. That's the exact same sort of view that we have about DID web. It's great for non-person entities that are issuing verifiable credentials. So a lot of our use cases are sort of supply chain use cases where you have a company that's producing, you know, trade documents associated with an import, and they might, you know, want to use a decentralized identifier that's sort of similar to the web origins that they're already using to be known in the supply chain.
As we've already talked about, DID web is somewhat unique in the DID space in that it both does not make use of a backend distributed ledger, as many of the DID methods we look at do, and it is not meant to be either somewhat ephemeral or peer-to-peer, such as methods like DID key and DID peer. What are the implications of having a DID method based on existing web technologies to you?
I think, I'm not sure I'm answering the question properly, but for me, the primary value of DID web comes from you're on a web origin interacting with a brand, and then you're able to confirm that that same entity has exposed a certain set of keys for a cryptographic purpose. So to me, the primary value of DID web when compared to some of these other DID methods is it's sort of you're in the same kind of channel with the brand that you were before. So if you think about being on Microsoft.com and looking for their PGP keys to encrypt a vulnerability disclosure, you want to send a vulnerability disclosure to Microsoft. And because it's sensitive, you want to make sure it's encrypted so that only the right recipient will read that information. You can, you know, Google Microsoft vulnerability disclosure PGP keys, and you'll come to a website and there'll be a PGP key right there on the web page from Microsoft. And if you trust that that key is really theirs, you'll then encrypt to that key and send them a vulnerability disclosure. If you think about what the key agreement relationship in a DID web DID document is doing, it's exactly the same thing, but at a sort of with some standards packaging around it so that you don't have to guess, you know, where is the vulnerability disclosure key. You know, on this website, you know, maybe this other web provider, they put it at a different web page. That those problems sort of go away. If you're looking at the DID web, you can discover a key that you could use to encrypt a vulnerability disclosure to just by having that identifier.
So the root authority for DID web ends up being the domain name system anchored by TLS. So Why do we need a DID method if DNS already provides this certificate mechanism with TLS? So like what do we get for this extra work?
That's a great question.
I can try to answer it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I saw it primarily as an interoperability layer between Web2 identity and Web3 identity. Web3 in that case means the new blockchain ecosystem that is emerging. People could then upgrade their services easier to another DID method once they are ready. Another advantage of having a DID method like that, so instead of TLS, is you typically want to have different keys for different use cases. So you don't want to encrypt data with your TLS certificate or with the keys in your TLS certificate just for security reasons. So you want to have different keys for encryptions and for encryption and signatures. It's one of the reasons.
Yep, I totally agree with that. I mean, one of the nice things about relying on DID Web is there's a certain set of key material that you might be using to protect your DNS records, certain set of key material you might be using to protect that TLS connection, and then trusting those, you know, two sets of cryptographic material and potentially cipher suites, you can then discover additional cipher suites that you might want to rely on to interact with that identifier. And the key material that's going into the document itself, that can be newer, sort of more experimental cryptography that you wouldn't find at DNSSEC layer or at TLS layers. And yet you're going to be able to easily make that key material available to certain parties that might want to start relying on it earlier. So it's, not to get into a totally different topic, which would be, you know, post-quantum cryptography or hybrid cryptography schemes. But DID Web is actually a really excellent technology for thinking about some of those use cases, because you might rely on traditional TLS and DNS to discover a post-quantum capable key. And then you might use that post-quantum capable key for digital signatures or for key encapsulation, other forms of encryption or privacy-oriented use cases. So it's, again, a really excellent bridging technology because of that flexibility that comes built into it.
Yeah, and I think selective disclosure in the verifiable credential or SSI world is another use case. So I think you won't be able to include the BLS key in your TLS certificate. But because DID Web is so flexible and allows you to add any key type, you can also add BLS keys, and then you would be able to support BBS Plus signatures, which is one of the ways we are currently standardizing for selective disclosure in the verifiable credential ecosystem.
So is it fair to sum up what you both just said as DID Web is a democratization of that key infrastructure, so you can use it for more and varied sort of use cases?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I remember though that the root of trust, you know, the system that's providing the security properties, is this sort of older system out there. So, you know, it is, I think, a highly consumable and usable DID method, but it comes with the baggage of the DNS and TLS ecosystem. And that baggage is a feature to some folks because there's a large, you know, well-trained, experienced user base that are used to securing web servers. And for other folks, they look at that particular part of DID Web and they feel, you know, saddened that we're still handling security using, you know, DNS and TLS. And isn't there a better way of handling these things? And DID Web sort of doesn't give you very much, you know, moving beyond them and at the fundamental sort of base layer, you know, when you think about what's ultimately securing this method.
Will DID Web work on a hosted content management service like a WordPress or other common low-cost web options of that kind that maybe individuals or small businesses might be using?
I haven't seen that yet, but in my opinion, it should work. Yeah.
Yep. I've heard folks have been exploring different attempts at WordPress plugins for it. I mean, one thing we should probably say is it's still a draft method specification. So it's not been standardized yet. So there might be changes. And what we're talking about right now might not be true, you know, several years from now, depending on how the method specification evolves. But today, if you want to build a plugin for a CMS system like WordPress to manage DidWebs, that's pretty easy to do. The plugin's primary job is to allow you to put a file at a specific path on the web server. And if you need multiple DID methods for the same web server, you can do that with DidWeb, or you can just rely on the single well-known path, which is for the whole origin itself. So if you, there's different use cases, you know, why you might want to be easily be able to create many different DidWebs on the same web server, and then the plugin would have to manage that ability to have many different identifiers on the same server, or you could just have a single file on that web server that represents that origin as a whole.
Okay, let's talk about people. Starting with you two, how did you get involved with DidWeb?
I mean, I was one of the original authors of the DidWeb specification and registered DidWeb in the W3C Did Method Registry.
Yeah, I joined the DidWeb later. And I didn't really start using DidWeb until it had the ability to represent multiple Did documents on the same web origin. So I used the first version of it, the one that Oliver and others created. And I was immediately hit this limitation that was frustrating of, I have to register a new origin every time I want to create a new identifier. And that made it kind of difficult to experiment with. And so I really started getting into using DidWeb once it got the ability to have these path-based routing identifiers, because then I could create a single web origin for a given purpose, and I could create an unbounded number of identifiers underneath that web origin. I could start exploring features. I used DidWeb a lot as we were testing the DidCore specification, because there are features of DidCore that are, the spec sort of said were legal, but that no one was really implementing, because every ledger, decentralized ledger, blockchain-based method system didn't support that feature. So arbitrary integer properties or really deeply nested object structures, some of these edge cases were hard to find even a single DID method that you could provide an example of. But DidWeb made it really easy to test those kinds of features, and I could use several different identifiers. So I could create an identifier that's sole purpose was to express a certain edge case of the DID specification. So I started using it for those kinds of cases, and then to test interoperability features, you know, for certain kinds of cryptography. Two identifiers want to agree to using a particularly new cryptographic suite. DidWeb was a really useful tool for testing those kinds of new cryptographic suites, because if the suite changed, you could easily change the DID document. It wasn't like I have to pay testnet ether or mainnet ether to change my identity document. I can just change the file on the web server. So it was very helpful for evaluating whether a specification that was built on top of decentralized identifiers was going to work well. It was a very lightweight way of concretely testing some of those use cases.
Cool. And as a follow-up, what is important about this work to you personally? Another way of asking that might be, you know, you're the superheroes who have created DidWeb. What's your origin story? Why'd you do it?
So my personal motivation to actually co-author the DidWeb method in the first place was to make decentralized identity technology more accessible and lower the implementation barrier by using existing technology that are well approved and well understood.
Yeah, I think sort of a similar motivation for getting involved in the work. I think it's easy, especially in, you know, cryptography standards, to get really attached to complexity. And so you look at some of these specifications that are really complicated and interesting, and you get really sucked into how important all this complexity was to creating this new standard, this new specification. And what I like about DidWeb is how simple it is. It's very, very simple. And that simplicity is what makes it so easy for folks to to implement themselves, to explore, to adopt. And every piece of complexity that we add to DidWeb might make it harder for people to adopt DidWeb. And that's a thing, as we build standards, we should always kind of keep in mind, because the adoption of the technology is really the most important piece. It's the standard is not going to matter at all if nobody's using it. And so DidWeb's simplicity makes it really usable. And there's trade-offs that come with that. Like, you know, you might wish that DidWeb had some better long-term integrity management tracking capabilities, but adding them to it would make it a lot more complex. So there's a trade-off there. Do we want the DID data model to be adopted, or do we want, you know, DID web to have the same properties that a blockchain-based DID method would have? And, you know, maybe I think a lot of folks look at the diversity within the DID ecosystem as if it's a bad thing. Like, there should only be one DID method. If we all could agree to just one ring, then we'd have this great amount of interoperability, right? But if you think about tools in the toolboxes, you don't have one tool that you use for everything. If you think about database systems, it's not like everyone's running one database system for all of those use cases. There's special purpose tools. And in the DID ecosystem, there are DIDs that are better than DidWeb for certain things. And there's DidWeb, and it is better than many other DID methods for certain kinds of things. So it's a sort of specialized DID method. I don't think it's the last DID method that folks will use, but I think it has a place right now where it's kind of king of a particular class of DID method, which is DIDs that are built on existing standards and technologies that are well adopted. DidWeb is the king of that class today, or queen, whichever you prefer.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing through that is that these are tools to advance self-sovereign identity, or get more people using the tools for their own self-sovereign identity. And a follow-up question might be like, why is that? Why is that important?
That's an awesome question. My interest in this entire space comes from my experience in college. So my undergraduate was in cybersecurity, and I was exploring social network malware and information warfare and these issues on social networks where you're trying to convince people to believe things, or you're trying to create, you know, various forms of advertising fraud. And so my first experience with identity, you know, in college as a security researcher was looking at what the bad guys are doing with social media identity. And I started realizing they're using cryptography, they're using digital signatures, they're really taking advantage of these cryptographic tools, and they're pretty hard to defeat in some cases because they're really using this technology very effectively. And I started to wonder whether individuals could use the same cryptographic tools to protect themselves and their own digital rights. And then, you know, the Bitcoin paper came out and started to see hints that other people, you know, were thinking also about these same sort of scenarios. How can cryptography protect my ability to express my rights as a human being? And the decentralized identifiers standard is supposed to give interoperability to, I think, that intention sort of broadly. It's not just about, you know, whether or not you should control things that have money-like properties, or whether or not you should be able to produce digital signatures or, you know, encrypt communications for another identifier. It's really about giving a framework to folks who want to create an identifier for a purpose and then use cryptography to protect their intention behind that choice that they made. They might have many different reasons that they want to create that identifier and use it. I mean, they could be a journalist and they need a new identifier that's brand new, that's never been seen before, in order to interact with a source. Or they could be standing up an identifier associated with a brand that's running a campaign to hand or disaster relief, and they just want a new identifier that's specific for that campaign to take funds in. So it's not, you know, the use cases are broad and varied, but they all come back to this idea that cryptography is really important if you're interested in protecting privacy and providing security, you're going to need to use cryptography. And this is, DIDs are the sort of boundary between the cryptography technology and the sort of these identifiers that we use to relate to the entities that we're trying to interact with. And DID Web as a category of identifier is really good at providing that kind of experience if you're trying to interact with an organization, you know, some kind that has some business out there, you know, on the internet.
Who else has been important to the evolution of DID Web? Anyone you want to give a shout out to?
W3C, CCG, big shout out to that group.
Yeah, there's a largish number of contributors to the DID Web specification document. And I think, you know, Dimitri, I'm not going to attempt his last name.
Zach Adulin.
There we go. Dimitri has done a lot of work. Amy has done a good amount of work. Manu and Dave Longley have also contributed really heavily to DID Web. Mike Prorock has contributed to DID Web. Different folks joined at different times. Like Oliver's been here since the beginning. I joined sort of later. I think a lot of folks, they come to the DID Web specification, they read it, they realize it's really simple, they go off to deploy it, and then they hit an edge case and they come back to the specification and they fix that edge case for themselves and then for everyone else as part of that process. And so the specifications that have evolved as folks have gone off and tried to use it and hit a problem that they needed solved, and they come back and they help the specification evolve. You know, one area that we're still sort of struggling with is the metadata in the DID Web DID document. And that's an area that's still receiving a lot of active contribution from the community. People are debating, how should we handle this? If we extend it, what new properties do we get? Why are those properties important to me or, you know, my use case? So I think it's still the contributor. There have been a lot of folks that have contributed to it, but I expect there still are many contributors that haven't joined yet that will contribute in the future and that will help shape, you know, what DID Web will become.
Are there any companies that are particularly involved or particularly standing up behind it?
Well, I will speak for myself. I'm you know, Ori Steele, I'm CTO at Transmute. We use DID Web today. We're really excited about it for these issuer use cases, and especially for identifying non-person entities in supply chains that rely on verifiable credentials.
Spruce Systems Inc. also has an implementation of DID Web, but it's not my personal favorite DID method. We can maybe talk about this later. It actually is.
Here ends part one of our episode on DID Web and concludes our show today. The conversation continues in part two. And that will bring us to the end of our show today.
Ori, thank you for joining us on the show today. Oliver, thank you. Thanks also to our staff, our producer, Eric O'Connell, and my co-host, Eric Hsu. I'm your host, Joe Andrew.
Wherever you find the Rubrik podcast, please take a moment to subscribe to our feed so you'll be notified when our next episode is released. We look forward to you joining us next time.
The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by the speakers in this podcast belong solely to the speakers and not necessarily to the speaker's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual.